This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The Electoral Commission says as long as you are in line by 5 p.m. when the polls are officially supposed to be closed, the law allows you to vote. Now, if you come in after 5 p.m. and you are not in queue, you cannot vote.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti reporting from Accra on Ghana's presidential and parliamentary elections. Details next. Also, the influx of South Sudan refugees into Uganda is taking a toll on the government of Uganda. And Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has appealed for calm as his government suffers a major economic crisis. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the polls have officially closed in Ghana, but people still waiting to cast ballots for president and members of parliament will be able to do so. President John Mama is facing a strong challenge from opposition leader Nana Akufo-Addo. VOA's Peter Cloti is following developments in Ghana. He says voting was heavy early today. He spoke to Jody Kapua from a polling center in the capital, Accra, about any reports of irregularities.
There have been few reports of misunderstanding of accusations and counter-accusations by the supporters of the ruling party and main opposition New Patriotic Party in several parts of the country. Isolated cases, they said, but those misunderstandings were brought to a halt when meetings were arranged in various polling stations so that disagreements could be resolved. Those were resolved and voting continued. So there have been no reports further after the resolution of those cases, no reports of any violence or anything like that, although there were some confrontations that the police were quick to put to rest.
Once the polls close, what about those standing in line? Will they get a chance to vote?
The Electoral Commission says as long as you are in line by 5 p.m. when the polls are officially supposed to be closed, the law allows you to vote. Now, if you come in after 5 p.m. and you are not in queue, you cannot vote. That is the law. That is where the Electoral Commission draws the line. So anybody who is an eligible voter, as long as you are in the line by 5 p.m., no matter how long the line is, you will be allowed to vote. They said it's your constitutional right, and it is their civic duty to perform. So the laws allow them to do that, and they will not stop them. However, if you are not in queue and it's at 5 p.m., you will not be allowed to vote.
Would you remind our listeners when the results might be available for the presidential and parliamentary elections?
For parliamentary elections, the results are announced by constituency to constituency because parliamentarians represent the constituencies. Election officials in those constituencies will declare the results today as and when they are able to tabulate the results. However, for the presidential election, since the chairperson of the Electoral Commission is the only presiding officer, she is the only person who can declare the outcome of the presidential election. So as the results come in, certified results come in from all the polling stations and constituencies around the country, it's brought to the Commission Center at the Electoral Commission, and there the Electoral Commission will then announce who won the presidential election. So they told me that within 48 to 72 hours, they should have the results to declare. However, the law does not put a time tag on when they are expected to announce the results. However, the Electoral Commission has made it a tradition to announce between a day and 72 hours to announce the outcome of a presidential election.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti from Accra. He spoke to Jody Kapua. The influx of South Sudan refugees into Uganda since July is taking a toll on the government of Uganda as well, plus donor support. Relief organizations like World Food Program, WFP, are seeking more donations to help feed the refugees. Reporter Catherine Nambi has more on the story from Kampala.
The UN Refugee Agency says Uganda is currently hosting about 590,000 South Sudan refugees and asylum seekers. The UNHCR says most of the refugees fled after renewed fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and his then Vice President Riek Machar in July of this year. Olivia Sarah is one of those who fled Juba during the tensions.
I come from Juba because of that area is not good for me. My mother is not there. My mother, when these people they are fighting, I'm from hospital, and when I come back, I'm not getting at home.
The refugee host communities are feeling strained and are calling for a permanent resettlement camp or transit center for the refugees. Jake Ochan, community development officer in the Lamu district of northern Uganda, explains.
There is issue of clean water, which we need also to share with the refugees coming, issues of immunization against some of the common killer diseases. And our brothers and sisters who are coming from southern Sudan is putting pressure also on the current or the little food that we have among the population. We want to see a permanent solution for the future, whether we can have transit center or a permanent resettlement center, whether in Lamu or any neighboring district, that at the end will help us to really support our brothers.
Margaret Babadiri is a member of parliament in Koboko, one of the refugee host districts in northern Uganda. She says leaders have asked their people to accommodate the refugees.
Indeed, the situation of refugees is overwhelming. The refugees who come through Oraba, some of them are taken to Reno camp, others are taken to Yumbe, but the majority have decided to live within Koboko. We welcome them because most of them are actually related to us. Some are Kakwas, some are Lumadis, and even Acholis. They are all related to us, so we welcome them, but we need to live in harmony with them.
Cheryl Harrison, Deputy Country Director for the World Food Program in Uganda, says the refugee numbers are overwhelming.
We're feeding over 300,000 refugees. Many of them are actually from South Sudan. We're feeding in excess of 150,000 from South Sudan at the moment. We're optimistic that the situation in South Sudan will improve, but in the meantime, we'll continue to provide the support that they require.
She says WFP, with the help of donors, distributes cash and food.
So we seek contributions from our donors, from the likes of the US government, from the UK government and from others. And in turn, we then use that money to procure the food and then distribute it into the refugee settlements.
She says, however, that with the surge in the South Sudan refugee population, WFP is appealing for more donor support. Susan Dujang is from Yei, South Sudan. She says the food rations are not enough for her and for her family.
When we arrived here, life was very difficult. But at least now, they are giving water, even though sometimes they used to delay to bring the water. But at least nowadays, we used to stay good. But the problem of food shortage is now a problem to us because the quantity they have given us is little. Like in the morning, we do take porridge. Then afternoon, we don't take anything. We just stay after evening. That's when we shall eat food. And so it really affects because the children used to cry that they are hungry. Now if we are to eat like twice a day, what if the flour got finished? What next should we do?
The Uganda government has budgeted $42 million to cover the cost of food, water and sanitation, health and education for the refugees. However, it has only secured half of this, making it hard for all refugees to get sufficient relief support. Each South Sudanese refugee in Uganda is entitled to a 50 by 50 plot of land for cultivation and settlement. Refugees also receive materials to build shelters. Refugees have access to health care and education within the host community they live in. They have the right to work and do business, but also have freedom of movement. For VOA, this is Catherine Nambi reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiswuhib in Washington. 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Voters in Ghana today are choosing a president and members of parliament. And the influx of South Sudan refugees into Uganda is taking a toll on the government of Uganda. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The European Police Agency says it will reinvestigate the June 7th shipwreck in the Eastern Mediterranean. It took the lives of more than 500 African and Middle Eastern migrants. Europol Director Robert Wainwright says his agency will look again at the year's largest shipwreck after two news agencies, Reuters and BBC, disclosed yesterday that no authorities have held an inquiry into the tragedy. Reuters has identified the ship's owners, the smugglers who organized the voyage, and the brokers who sold passage to migrants. The trawler left from Cairo and Alexandria. Among the dead were an estimated 190 Somalis, 150 Ethiopians, 80 Egyptians, and another 85 people from Sudan, Syria, and other countries. An estimated 37 migrants survived. Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe has appealed for calm as his government suffers a major economic crisis. The president appeared frail but jovial as he delivered 30-minute State of the Nation yesterday. The 92-year-old leader praised his security forces for maintaining order despite popular street demonstrations and social media protests. Mr. Mugabe chuckled when an MP asked aloud if he was reading the right speech. During last year's address, he delivered a text intended for a previous event. At the end of December, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will leave office after a decade at the helm of the world body. He sat down with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir to reflect on his time as the world's top diplomat.
He has traveled the world trying to prevent and end conflicts, promote development, and lessen the effects of climate change. Along the way, he has met scores of world leaders, refugees, and victims of natural disasters. Bond says it will be up to historians to judge his legacy, but he points to the ambitious 17-point Sustainable Development Agenda to end poverty as one of his most important accomplishments.
I'm confident that by 2030, the older people will be in a much better way in living in a healthier, more prosperous and more peaceful world. And this is my hope.
Bon also says he is proud of the Paris Climate Accord, which went into effect last month.
It required a lot of political mobilization, and it required forging a stronger partnership and raising the awareness of the government leaders and business leaders and civil societies.
Bon also has been praised for the UN's efforts to end the death penalty, improve women's rights, and fight violence and discrimination against the LGBT community. But his list of unfinished business runs long.
When it comes to continuing crisis in Syria and elsewhere, South Sudan, Yemen, Central African Republic, and elsewhere, we have to show unity of purpose and the solidarity for the people. Often, I have been shocked by the lack of empathy of some world leaders.
Bon, a native of South Korea, also is preoccupied with the mounting tension on the Korean Peninsula because of North Korea's repeated nuclear and ballistic missile tests. He tried to go to North Korea last year, but Pyongyang canceled the visit at the last minute.
It was a unilateral cancellations. I really tried to do whatever I can to contribute to, first of all, reduction of tensions on the Korean Peninsula and also promote the reconciliation between the two parts of Korea.
There has been much speculation about Bond's future. At 72, he is still full of energy and looks unlikely to change his workaholic ways. He has long been tipped to be a top contender in South Korea's 2017 presidential race. But recently, the country has been engulfed in a political crisis that could see the current president impeached if she doesn't resign, which could move the election forward. Bond says South Korea has resilient and mature democratic institutions, and he is confident it will come through the current crisis. As for a presidential run, he will only say that he is keeping his options open.
When I become a civilian, private citizen, then I will have to discuss this matter with the leaders of Korean society, my friends, my family.
Until then, he will keep everyone guessing. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
U.S. President Barack Obama yesterday touted his administration's achievements in combating terrorists. In his final speech on national security delivered at Florida's MacDill Air Force Base, Obama said the United States has weakened Islamic State and reduced its image to that of barbarians and murderers. The president said that Al-Qaeda has been sidelined with the death of its leader, Osama bin Laden. He warned that Americans must uphold the country's values for continued success in defeating terrorism. Zlatika Hoke reports.
In his address at MacDill Air Force Base, the president said his administration was successful in fighting terrorism thanks to a new strategy of engaging local partners in the Middle East and Asia.
Instead of pushing all of the burden onto American ground troops, instead of trying to mount invasions wherever terrorists appear, we've built a network of partners.
Obama noted that Al-Qaeda is a shadow of its former self after the killing of its leader Osama bin Laden. He said the military power of Islamic State is also weakened after the United States and its allies dismantled its financial resources and the ability to attract young people into its ranks.
We've attacked ISIL's financial lifeline, destroying hundreds of millions of dollars of oil and cash reserves. The bottom line is we are breaking the back of ISIL. We're taking away its safe havens, and we have, and we've accomplished all this at a cost of $10 billion over 2 years, which is the same amount that we used to spend in 1 month at the height of the Iraq War.
Obama said all this has been achieved without using torture or linking Muslims to terrorism. He also said the best long-term strategy to fight terrorism is development.
This is how we prevent conflicts from starting in the first place. This is how we can ensure that peace is lasting after we've fought. It's how we stop people from falling prey to extremism because children are going to school and they can think for themselves. And families can feed themselves and aren't desperate.
Obama criticized Congress for creating obstacles to his campaign promise to close the Guantanamo Bay prison. The number of inmates has been drastically reduced, but he said the costly detention center is a blot on the national honor.
We can get these terrorists and stay true to who we are. And in fact, our success in dealing with terrorists through our justice system reinforces why it is past time to shut down the detention facility at Guantanamo.
The outgoing president thanked U.S. troops for their commitment to protect the U.S. Constitution and the country's freedoms. Perhaps as a reminder to his successor, Obama said the United States is a society that can criticize a president without retribution. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the U.S. government is urging President Joseph Kabila and his political opponents to reach an agreement before the end of Kabila's term on December 19th, but time is quickly running out. Tom Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region, is in Kinshasa, the Congolese capital, and spoke with William Klaus.
December 19th marks the end of DRC President Joseph Kabila's second five-year term, and many in the country are nervous as the date approaches. Elections were to have been held this year, but have not been organised. Kabila now plans to remain in office until polls can be held in 2018. A large opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, views the president's prolonged second and under the constitution final term as a power grab. This group wants him to leave at the end of his mandate and calls for elections in 2017. The lack of common ground between the parties has observers fearing a repeat of September 19th, when a Rassemblement demonstration in Kinshasa descended into violence. The United Nations says that security forces killed more than 50 people over 2 days. The US government and others in the international community are supporting the Catholic Church, known as CENCO, which is working to find a compromise. Tom Perriello, the US Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region, is in Kinshasa meeting with Kabila and others. He spoke with VOA.
Our most urgent message is the absolute importance of full cooperation with the CENCO process run by the Catholic bishops to try to organize a broad consensus among the key stakeholders on how we can move forward. Even though we're in the 91st minute of stoppage time, the reality is there is still a bit of time on the clock here for the sides to come together.
Late last week, it appeared that the church's efforts had failed when Kabila's political alliance, the presidential majority, walked away from the mediation. But this week, the president reaffirmed his support for the process.
It was unfortunate that key members of the majority declared it dead. But perhaps fittingly for the bishops, it was resurrected on the third day, and we are back at it. And so I think partly as a matter of faith, we are going to continue to support this process in its entirety up until December 19th in the hopes that there can be a breakthrough.
Perriello says that the situation need not have reached this dangerous stage and that both sides deserve some blame.
We've also been very clear publicly and privately with President Kabila that a statement 18 months ago, 12 months ago, or 6 months ago, stating with absolute clarity what remains crystal clear in the Constitution, would have been incredibly constructive, de-escalatory, and created much more space for dialogues.
Earlier this week, the head of the UN mission in the DRC warned of the possibility of a major outbreak of politically related violence on December 19th. Perriello noted that when there was political violence in Burundi, Washington imposed sanctions on individuals from both the government and opposition. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Fidel Castro ruled Cuba for 47 years, leaving an imprint on almost every major revolutionary effort in Africa after 1959. Join us for an in-depth look at Castro's impact on Africa. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.